Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I actually, before I get started, let me do a plug. There are many companies that are, one, patriotic, and, you know, employing people, family-owned, and so forth. And I want you to know, if you are looking for a good quality wood furniture, and when I say wood furniture, I'm talking about oak, walnut, maybe hickory, any type of hardwood you want or desire that you would, you know, you need a table, you need something, Timber Nations. Go look at Timber Nations. And as a matter of fact, I probably need to create a link just so people can go there. If you're looking for, you know, an audio rack, or if you're looking for a desk or something, these guys do it. They're made in America, and this is 100% solid hard wood. Now, as we were, my wife and I, my beautiful bride, was looking at, you know, getting a piece of furniture to make a change in the family room. So we have a home theater, you know, and that's a home theater room. And in the family room, we actually didn't have a TV. And go, you know, let's put the TV in here, because we don't always need to fire up the entire theater just to, you know, sit and watch something. And so we kind of had an impromptu. We'd done some things and so forth, but we wanted to get something really nice. And what we ended up doing was we looked around, and we went to all of the big retailers, you know, online and so forth, and it was all junk. Or when I say junk, it was expensive wood veneer, possibly, you know, maybe some decent, you know, parts to it, but not 100% quality. When I say 100%, I mean 100% solid wood, 100%, you know, American labor, everything coming in from China. And so when we found Timber Nations, we, you know, reached out and said, hey, can you guys do this for us? And they said, absolutely. Loved it. We got it. We love it. And if you want a piece of a shelving 2 inches thick, I'm saying 2 inches thick, friends, of solid oak, solid walnut, solid hickory, solid maple. If you want that kind of quality and that beautiful look of wood, go look at Timber Nations. I'm telling you that you will probably fall in love with what they've got. And you may look at the price. It comes with free shipping. But I am telling you, with the cost of materials and everything else, things have gone up dramatically. We've already talked about how the price of just building, shoot, a 2x4 costs $100 now, if not more. If you start looking at even plywood, just basic building materials is ridiculous. And so it's rippled out to everything. If you need a piece of furniture, if you need a desk, if you need a table, look these guys up. I am telling you, they will give you, and they do everything custom. I mean, they're willing to do anything. As long as you're willing to pay for the effort, labor, and all that type of stuff, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I enjoyed working with the owner. As a matter of fact, we talked a little bit. He understood exactly what we wanted. You know, I'd like to think everything was custom. And as a matter of fact, I believe this is the first time, I think, he's told me that this is the first time they've done oak. So in a long, long time, they've been using maple and these other exotic, or I should say American hardwoods. Friends, if you need to get something, check these guys out. I highly, highly endorse them. This is not a paid commercial. I do not have any, even Ad Local, who I do promos on a regular basis, every show, is not a paid advertisement. I just want you to understand this. I am not beholden to anybody paying me. And so what we're doing is, when we find, if you've got a business that, you know, is a quality business, an American business, American product, and those types of things, and you know, you can call me, or you can send us an email or what have you, I'd be happy to, you know, look at what you're doing to help promote of good conservative American businesses. This is why we need to do this, because we have an election coming, and I am going to go to Timber Nations. I am going to go to, you know, Ad Local and say, can you please support these candidates in these few states? Because this is where we need that help. And we're hoping that the American businesses, you know, and hint, 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 are saving a little money, putting a little money aside so that we can start converting and saving this republic. Because Soros is doing it. He's buying up politics as usual. This is where these billionaires have been so good and successful and making so much money, like Bill Gates and the rest of them. This is what they're doing. The only way we can counter this is by using small businesses to invest in the flyover states, the dark red counties, the dark red races and districts in America, because it's the heartland that is going to save America. I will prove this to you. I need a little bit of faith. I need you to challenge everything I say and do so that you too can actually take a stand and have the full commitment that this is what and why and how we need to do this. Now, this show is sponsored by republicreview.org, and this is the only show that goes through the academic. I am not a paid entertainer. I believe, you know, I was listening to, unfortunately, it was Charlie Kirk at the time, and he was bragging about the money he was making from his podcast, and I'm going, okay, well, obviously, this guy is more concerned about mammon than he is about America. I am blessed. My wife and I have been blessed to be in this position at this point in time to where we're able to carry this message out without having to monetize, without having to, you know, feed ourselves and become greedy where, you know, there's all sorts of people selling their products and selling their wares. We need your help. We need you to get involved, start reaching out to us. Let us help you interfacing with the National Liberty Alliance and the parties and all these other grassroots organizations and activist organizations that you need to get involved with anyway from the get-go. Let us get working together, because as we start uniting, we are going to wake people up and we are going to put the fear of God in them. We have a comment line, 425-270-5416. There you go right there. You want to reach out to me? 425-270-5416. Charles did. Again, Charles, forgive me. I still have not gotten with you. I will be launching an email, and you will be getting back with me. Hopefully, we can set up a Skype opportunity to talk. Anywho, I was kind of wrapping up the strategic stuff, you know, the battlefields. I just want you to understand that we, to get some of these things instituted and changed, to get this message out there, we actually need to exploit the same thing the progressives are exploiting. We want to shut off. We want to basically prove, to point out, you know, who's investing in government in your state that's coming out of state, like Soros, all of these multi-billionaire, you know, multi-country corporations. All of this stuff is pouring big-time money into rhino races. They're pouring big-time money into progressive communist candidates who are willing to turn their head and watch the Constitution get shredded, so that they can basically collapse our liberty, collapse our government, collapse our system, and fold us into their control. Folks, we can't let this happen. You can't let this happen. So as we look at the battlefield, because that's where I was talking at the end of last episode, we were talking about where the federal battlefield, where we need to be starting. And we don't really go to the federal battlefield and start flexing muscle until we have 13 states. The state battlefields possess both tactical and strategic interests at both the county and the state level. We need to get state legislatures into office. The governors, the executives, it's nice. But they're not sovereigns. They're not kings. They don't have the power. And if they exercise power in doing those types of things, then they've really overstepped their bounds as what they should be doing, because they should just be enforcing the law. What we want is we want to wake people up and get people going into the proper paradigm. I'm okay with getting a good, strong, conservative, constitutional champion for Republican view in the governorship. I'm okay with, you know, Taylor Haynes and John Gentry and other candidates that want to actually turn their state around. But they have to do it by forcing their state legislature. And if they can't, then what they need to do is they need to go down to the counties and they need to actually start rebelling up the troops, getting the troops aroused down at the county level to say, this is a dark red county. What's your excuse? Take the time and get out there and speak and wake up your state. The weapons on these battlefields are very simple. We tell you right up front what they are. They're basically your First Amendment petition. You do not have a right to protest, but you do have a right and obligation to petition your government for the redress of grievances. And the next weapon that we have that even it even fires a more powerful shot is the common law grand juries. And we can create common law grand juries by using petitions and demanding that common law grand juries be used for the remedy in redressing the grievances, in identifying, has the Constitution been violated by the state governor, the existing governor, by declaring stay at home and all these other orders? Can we start removing these people? This is what the declarations need to be coming out of these common law grand juries. We'll get into the details more, but we'll be right back after these two promos. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me just kind of wrap up. As people may not understand what these weapons are, petitioning, common law grand juries, as we start getting organized, as we start pulling together these unorganized militias, just like a 45, just like a 9mm, just like any type of long barrel, whether it be shotgun or whether it be, you know, an AR-15, choose your weapon. You need to go out and fan fire. You need to go out and actually pull the trigger. You need to understand the recoil, the kick, you know, the reloading of the weapon. You know, what does it take? Because for you to become efficient in using that gun, you're not battle ready until you're actually very efficient in using that. We need people to be battle ready and efficient in using your petition. Just don't marginalize what it takes to do these things. And this is why we need you to start getting involved and getting educated and becoming a warrior using the Constitution and using these weapons in the Constitution so that we can actually win this war. There's a reason why these weapons were put into the Constitution. And the only reason why is very obvious. So that we, in these days, at this time, I tell people all the time, only the good Lord knew what we needed to do and what was going to happen. He knew what we would need. He gave it to us. And you're just going to sit there and just let it languish? And you're going to sit there and let the Constitution just continually be discarded, shredded, and marginalized to a point where it is removed from us? We can't let these things happen. Okay, so I've kind of closed on the high level, 10,000 feet. If you want to get into the lower level, you need to continue to stay tuned, listen. We'll get into some of the other issues, some of the other details. We're working as a constitutional county or getting yourself to becoming a constitutional county. We'll be working with you to do that. Give us a call, though, okay? And as you know, that phone call is 425-270-5416. That's the number you call to get a hold of us, okay? Now, the 1798 resolutions. Now, Thomas Jefferson, just so you understand, he wrote the Kentucky resolutions, both in 1798 and 1799. You may see the 1798 resolutions labeled as draft, because what he wrote was basically submitted to the Kentucky Kentucky legislature, so that they could choose to, you know, submit it or not. The following resolutions were adopted by the Kentucky legislature on November 10th, 1798, as a protest against the Alien and Sedition Acts passed by Congress. Now, this is something that many people don't understand, but today most people know it was Thomas Jefferson, but they didn't understand that that was not a public fact. As a matter of fact, that was kind of withheld for a long time, and he never spoke much about nullification beyond these two resolutions. The word nullifications only appear, the word nullification only appears in this resolution. It's not in the 1798 resolution, and it's not in any of Madison's writings or his resolutions. Why? Because nullification, as we will learn at the very end, nullification is a process that is applied when the law violates the fundamental tenets that support that law or that law is based upon. And so, when the Constitution itself is violating the God's law and the laws of nature's God, then we have a problem. And that part of the Constitution needs to be nullified. See, nullification is not a violation of the Constitution. It is a law that is based upon the constitutional powers, the constitutional authority, and or like the enumerated powers within the Constitution. So what does that mean? That means that if there is something within the Constitution that violates God's law or the nature's God, and as we understand the concept of the Declaration of Independence, that all men were created equal, that given to all are inalienable rights or unalienable, or inalienable, or however you want to use the word, because there's different words that you'll find in different writings, different drafts, and so forth. But bottom line, these inalienable rights endowed by our Creator, we are endowed by our Creator, these rights, among them being life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so when one looks at this thing called slavery, and it being practiced in a land of liberty, and somebody happens to escape their slave masters, and they get out of that state, and they get to a state that does not practice slavery. Inside the Constitution actually supports the concept of returning slaves back to the states. And so if we go to Article 4, and I believe it is, let me see here, Section 2, the citizens of each state shall be entitled to all privileges and immunities, and this is basically the privileges, the citizens of each state will be, you know, entitled to the privileges and immunities of citizens of the several states. In other words, the same things as well as things underneath the Constitution. Now, most people do not understand that the Constitution actually created the U.S. citizen, because in Article 1, Section 8, subsection whatever, all U.S. citizens that are caught or held and charged with crimes against the laws of nations or crimes committed on the high seas, the jurisdiction for those crimes fall under the United States, not at your state level, because this United States had bigger trump card. So when people say that under the U.S. Constitution, you were not a U.S. citizen, that's an outright lie. And right there in the Constitution, it does declare the fact that the U.S. government, this new federal government, creates this thing called these jurisdictions over all U.S. citizens. Anyway, number two, subsection 2 of Article 4. A person charged in any state with treason, felony, or any crime who shall flee justice and be found in another state or on demand of the execution of authority of the state from which he fled to be delivered up, be removed from the state having jurisdiction of the crime. This subsection right here is what we will use to actually pull back every representative and every senator in Congress that refuses to do their job. They will be charged treason and or a felony of violating their oath and must go back to the states to actually answer for this felony. And so anyway, this is where we kind of hold that line in holding our public servants accountable. But it's subsection 3 that violates the essence of the Declaration of Independence. No person held to service or labor, slave labor, in one state under the laws thereof, escaping into another, shall be in consequence of any law or regulation therein be discharged from service or labor, but shall be delivered up on claim of the party on whom such service or labor may be due. Now, the 13th Amendment actually got rid of this, but the fact of the matter is that this law, this part of the Constitution, which was a political compromise in allowing and protecting somewhat the slave labor, didn't hold the federal government accountable to this, but it held the other states. Well, the states, you need to play along because this was a compromise that we made. But when states realized that they didn't have to, they actually started nullifying it by not recognizing it. And this is why we went into this discourse. As we get into the later notes on Madison's notes on nullification of 1834, you're going to find out that Madison was very, very picky about what nullification was and how nullification had to be applied. No single state could nullify a law within the Constitution like this law. What they had to do was if they were basically not going to recognize this law, they needed to secede from the Union. That's what they should have done. However, if you believe that a law needs to be nullified and you don't want to secede from the Union, there's another course of action that you have that Madison doesn't really talk about. And we'll get into all of this, but that action should be to change the Constitution. In other words, calling upon the states to convene a convention to amend the Constitution to correct the deficiency thereof, which means that you basically have a single-ended, you know, convention because you want to change this one very specific thing. That doesn't mean that you will actually have a convention, because every amendment that we have, except for a couple, have been driven by the states in the states calling for the amendment. So I just want you to appreciate and understand how this is being laid out, because there is providence, there is wisdom in this Constitution, in what, why, and how. Now, I do know that as this show is constantly monitored by the John Birch Society, in my using this word for the Constitutional Convention, is is popping up signals and setting off warnings throughout this network of pseudo constitutionalists of the John Birch leadership. And so I understand that, you know, they'll look at this and say, oh, see, he's supporting the Constitutional Convention. Yes, if you support nullification, John Birch Society, which is they're huge advocates for this, they don't understand that they actually support the Convention of States, or at least calling for an amendment to the Constitution and the states taking the necessary steps. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me get into the resolutions, and let me kind of explain to you what Jefferson is doing here. Jefferson isn't just saying, hey, these are violations of the law. Actually, what he does is he conducts an audit. He thoroughly goes through each of the acts and identifies what part of the act violates what part of the Constitution. If you understand Republic Review, that is the first effort that must be done by your state legislature. Now, when we talk about auditing, back in this time with Jefferson, they got this clean constitution. They have a few problems already that the state should be stepping up and saying, hey, we never gave you the authority to do this. But here comes these laws that they want to invoke and they want to pass where they have no jurisdiction. They have no authority to do these things. So what Jefferson does is he goes through and identifies how each of these, through an audit process, violates both the Constitution as well as the amendments to the Constitution. So what he says is, first off, he draws the line in defining what the Constitution is and how it and its and how the government, how the federal government obtains its authority and power. Listen, number one, resolved that the several states composing the United States of America, and oh, by the way, that's a capital U, are not united, little u, on the principle of unlimited submission to their general government, but that by a compact under the style and title of a constitution for the United States. So I want you to see the language he just used, the title of a constitution for the United States. You can just put quotes around that. Quote, Constitution for the United States, close quote, and of amendments thereto, they constituted a general government for special purposes, delegated to that government certain definite powers, reserving each state to itself the residuary mass of right to their own self-government. And whatsoever the general government assumes undelegated powers, it acts are unauthoritative, void and of no force, that to this compact each state acceded or agreed as a state and is an integral part, its co-states forming as to itself the other party, that the government created by this compact was not made the exclusive or final judge to the extent of powers delegated to itself, since that would have made its discretion and not the Constitution the measure of its powers, but that as in all other cases of compact among powers having no common judge, each party has an equal right to judge for itself as well of infractions as of the mode and measure of the redress. Now, this is where he makes a mistake. Madison spends the rest of his life and career correcting Jefferson because the federal government did not get the authority from one state. Its authority came about by the plurality of states, by a necessary threshold of states saying, you can do this. And therefore, it requires a group of states to actually state, you can't do this, or we're forcing you to abide by this. It's called interposition. And what many people look at nullification and this line right here, that each state, each party has an equal right to judge for itself. Well, actually, because this is a collective compact, only when there is a single party involved in the compact, or I should say when it's just you and you are the only judge, you actually have to get a coalescence of judges. This is why I kind of prefaced, before we went into this, what nullification truly was. Nullification is truly saying that there's a problem with the compact itself and it needs to be amended. But what we're talking about is a violation of the Constitution. Now, can states nullify? Do they have to enforce laws that they deem as unconstitutional? Well, the federal government has this requirement of treating everybody equally. And so if one state starts to say, you can't, and this is what Madison goes into in the notes, and this is why, you know, we'll go through those at the very end, but we're going to find that you can't differentiate between this state and that state. That's why there's some real dangers in single state nullification. This is why Republic Review really requires 13 states before the states actually start lowering the boom and kicking federal government and these other people out and saying, you can't do this anymore, and wipe away all these regulations, removing people from judgeships, removing people who have been basically doing the business of unconstitutional government and putting people into office that understands that if it's not within the Constitution, both of the state and the federal government, it's not in their jurisdiction. It can't be there. It's gone. The powers are left to where those residual powers are to be. And so if it's not within the state Constitution, like environmental protection, if it's not within the state Constitution, such as energy, labor, I don't know, but I'm going to tell you that the majority of the crap that your state has it is assumed because of federal mandates. But anyway, back to the resolutions. Now, so this is what he basically declared as his shot across the bow, saying, hey, this is a compact, and that we have, you know, a right to actually be judges as states in this compact to tell you whether, you know, this is right or wrong. We are the final arbiters, not you, because this is where he says, had it been the federal government that has been assumed and had this ability to make all of these powers because they had general powers, then it would have made it to their discretion to determine what they wanted to do. But that's not the case. They were limited to the defined powers delegated, and that is it. Now, if you gave somebody a general power of attorney and that person started selling everything out from underneath you, you deserve it. If you give somebody a limited or a special power of attorney to do one very specific thing, and that's all they can do, then you would expect them to do that. Well, that's the same thing we did when the states signed this Constitution. They gave them a power of attorney limited to doing only these things. And this is why, and this is where I tell you that the Bill of Rights had no place in our Constitution until the civil rights. Because the need for protecting people from the state shenanigans really was marginal. However, it wasn't until the bill of, I should say, from the federal government. I mean, the federal government wasn't going around taking guns. They were taking whiskey. They were taxing whiskey. They were trying to, but they had the power to do some of those things because they did have the ability to direct tax. But anyway, I digress. The fact of the matter is that Jefferson delineated the type of compact and who the judges were in that first resolution. This next one, Resolution 2, resolved that the Constitution of the United States, having delegated to Congress a power to punish treason, counterfeiting the securities and coin of the United States, piracy and felonies committed on the high sea, and offenses against the law of nations, and no other crimes whatsoever. So what he just did was he identified the criminal jurisdiction that the federal government had. They can't make speech a crime. They can't punish and come up with, you know, anything that's related to speech, immigration, or any of these other things as crimes and be able to prosecute you. Then he goes on and says, and it being true as a general principle and one of the amendments to the Constitution, having also declared that, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, not prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, close quote. Therefore, the Act of Congress passed the 14th day of July, 1798, and entitled, quote, an act in addition to the act entitled an act for the punishment of certain crimes against the United States, close quote, as to the act passed by them on the day of June, 1798, entitled, quote, an act to punish frauds committed on the Bank of the United States, close quote, and all other acts which assume, create, define, or punish crimes other than those enumerated in the Constitution, are altogether void and of no force, and that the power to create, define, and punish such crimes are reserved, or is reserved, and of right appertain solely and exclusively to the respective states within their own territory. So, instantly, he basically laid this gauntlet down. He said, okay, we've got this compact, and you don't have, you know, you're tied to the enumerated powers. Then the next thing he does, he says, and nowhere in the enumerated powers do you have the right to create your own crimes. The only crimes you have jurisdiction over are these four: treason, counterfeiting the securities and coin, piracies and felonies committed on the high seas, and offenses against laws of nations. Those last two are basically in foreign land, and it is a jurisdiction over all U.S. citizens. My point being, my friends, is that here he just laid down and said, you guys are trying to create crimes that you have no jurisdiction delegated to you in the Constitution for. Boom, done. Well, he wasn't done, because there's several more resolutions that he has to get into. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to lay out how he sequenced everything so that it just, if you look at Republic Review, it's basically the same thing. That we start challenging all of these different powers that they've assumed that they have no authority to execute. And so, obviously, we're at a break, so we'll come back and we're going to knock out Resolutions 3, probably 4, maybe 5, And then we'll probably have a little bit more for the final segment. We may get through all of these resolutions in this day. I doubt it. Just because there's a lot to this, and I want you to fully understand. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. Set the record straight. Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Well, there's no way we're going to finish this because this is the last segment. My time flies when you're having fun. So this is very informational, and this is exactly what the framers built within, and they recognize the fact that this is a compact that the Constitution falls under and is constrained by contract law. In other words, all of these people who created this thing called constitutional law is really a misnomer, because many things that they have created as constitutional law are just usurpations. If it is within the compact, then, and if it is a delineated power, case in point, immigration. Obviously, the general government took over the control of immigration as of 1808. We're going to get into that in this resolution. But also, they had the control over the flow of citizens coming and going. Now, at the very beginning, they didn't think they needed to control, but as things grew and as travel and air travel, to be able to make sure that the people that are coming back into the United States are U.S. citizens, it was within the reasonable and necessary and proper for the State Department to create passports for U.S. citizens to travel abroad. In other words, you could have been able to travel to some country that doesn't require, you know, a citizenship and or a passport. And had you gotten there, then that's great. But getting back into the United States with passport laws, it is within the parameters of the Constitution for the federal government to create, manage, and maintain passports for citizens who want to travel abroad. So how do you prove that you're a U.S. citizen without that passport? Because, again, they created a legitimate constitutional law that requires that if you travel abroad, you have to use a passport. And, you know, I don't know many people that have been, have been denied a passport. I mean, you really have to be a bad player to be denied a passport. And there's some reasons that are legitimate, but many of them are unconstitutional because, again, the federal government has just assumed all these other powers, that they can control everything in every facet of our lives. But putting all that aside, just in understanding that they can do certain things within the frameworks of the Constitution, and those things, that, as they create laws for those in how to administer and how to obtain and, you know, what to do to keep and those types of things, that becomes the constitutional framework for the few things that are constitutional law. Everything else, though, is probably not constitutional if it's not tied to an enumerated power. But anyway, Resolution 3. Resolution 3 is the next one we're going to go through. So obviously we've still tied the, and I just want to make sure, we've covered Resolutions 1 that kind of created this, you know, identification of what the Constitution is, that the states have all the residual power that is defined, and the second resolution defined that the federal government cannot have or does not have jurisdiction over any crimes, therefore they are limited to only these crimes, and therefore that these other acts in creating crimes in categories that they have no jurisdiction over is null and void. They can't do it. It's unconstitutional. Therefore, the acts themselves, based on that right there, and the fact that they're creating crimes that they have no enumerated power or jurisdiction for, is unconstitutional. These acts are, at that point, Jefferson had solved the problem that they were unconstitutional, but he did not end there. He went into more detail and identified how other ways that these acts have violated the Constitution. So for the rest of these next few resolutions, we're going to go through some of these other ways, how this act violated this part, and this part of the Constitution, this act violated this act, this part. So anyway, you can tell I'm getting excited because this is exciting stuff, folks. You should be really excited as you go through, learn, and read these things. Resolution 3, resolved. It is true, and it should be that, for some reason I have the, that it is true as a general principle and is also expressly declared by one of the amendments to the Constitution that, quote, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are prohibited by it to the states or reserved to the states respectively or to the people, and that no power over the freedom of religion, freedom of speech, or freedom of the press being delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, all lawful powers respecting the same did of the right remain and were reserved to the states or the people. That thus was manifested their determination to retain to themselves the right of judging how far the licentiousness of speech and of the press may be abridged. Now, I just want you to understand here, this is Jefferson telling you that the rights of the speech and the rights of the press can be abridged because at this point in time, the Bill of Rights was not applied to the states until the 14th Amendment. But what I am trying to also tell you is that as of the 14th Amendment, the only thing that applies to the states are the protections of individual civil liberties. In other words, your right of speech, your right of, help me out here, religious expression, commerce, assembly, all of those types of things. As an individual citizen, your privileges cannot be basically taken from you, or the immunities protected by the Constitution cannot be taken from you. But that doesn't mean the press. That doesn't mean the platforms. That doesn't mean the institutions. That doesn't mean the churches, because these are organizations or institutions. And what he's basically saying is that the states can actually abridge the rights of the press basically by coming after them and saying, look, you know, you're not a U.S. citizen. You're an institution, and you've been producing, like Facebook, you've been producing all of this false information and fake news that we're holding you liable. And go after them and punish them for censoring and shutting down the free speech of the people. Let me go back and say, how far the licentiousness of speech and of the press may be abridged without lessening their useful freedom and how far those abuses, which cannot be separated from their use, should be tolerated rather than the use be destroyed. And thus, also, they guarded against all abridgment by the United States of the freedom of religious opinions and exercises, and retained to themselves the right of protecting the same as this state by a law passed by the general demand of its citizens had already protected them from all human restraint or interference. And that in addition to this great principle and express declaration, another and more special provision has been made by one of the amendments of the Constitution, which expressly declares that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of a religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, thereby guarding in the same sentence and under the same words the freedom of religion, of speech, and of the press. Insomuch that whatever violated either throws down the sanctuary which covers the others, rid the libels, falsehood, and defamation equally with hearsay and false religion, are withheld from the cognizance of federal tribunals. That therefore the Act of Congress of the United States passed on the 14th day of July, 1798, entitled An act in addition to the act entitled an act for the punishment of certain crimes against the United States, close quote, which does abridge the freedom of the press, is not law, but altogether void and of no force. Now, of course, he hasn't used nullify yet at all in any of these. He's just called them void and of no force because they're direct violations of the Constitution. Resolved, number four. That alien friends are under the jurisdiction and protection of the laws of the state wherein they are, that no power over them be delegated to the United States nor prohibited to the individual states distinct from their power over citizens. And it being true as a general principle, and one of the amendments to the Constitution having declared that the powers not delegated to the United States of the Constitution, prohibited to it by the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, quote, the act of the Congress of the United States passed on the day of July 1798, entitled, quote, an act concerning aliens, close quote, which assumes powers over alien friends not delegated by the Constitution, is not law, but is altogether void and of no force. So now see how he's going through each of these acts, and he's saying, this is violating it this way, this is violating this way. And so he's really piling up this huge legal case of all of these violations, not just one here or one there. Okay? Resolved that in addition to the general principle as well as the express declaration that powers not delegated are reserved, another and more special provision inserted to the Constitution from abundant caution has declared that, quote, the migration or importation of such persons as any of the states now existing shall think proper to admit shall not be prohibited by the Congress prior to the year 1808. Now, I'm stopping right here. What that right there, perfect timing, what that right there is the point in time when the federal government takes full cognizance and control over the migration of people into the United States. For 20 years, they did not have control, the states did. We're going to be going through this again. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in
in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.